I'd like now to welcome Catherine Lopez Kurland. She's an editor and historic preservationist, Enrique Lamadrid, who is a folklorist, and Miguel Gandert, photographer. And the three of them are contributors to a new book, Hotel Mariachi, Urban Space and Cultural Heritage in Los Angeles, published by the University of New Mexico Press. And there will be a book signing and musical performance this Sunday, the 16th of February at 2 o'clock at the Palace of the Governors here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So this is a really beautiful and fascinating book that starts with or centers around a particular hotel in Los Angeles, which was really in danger of being demolished, even though it was a historically important hotel. Talk about the history of this hotel and your connection to it, Catherine.
Mary Charlotte, thank you very much for inviting us to be here today. This was all a surprise to me. In East Los Angeles, the area called Boyle Heights, there was a hotel built by my great-grandparents in 1889, my mother's grandparents. And I had heard about it a little bit, but I knew they had a hotel, but I didn't know anything more. I didn't even know where it was. And I grew up in Los Angeles, but I never saw it. Nobody ever showed it to me. And I didn't ask. About 10 years ago, I was there having lunch at a nearby destination restaurant, and I knew at that point that the hotel was nearby. And we walked a few blocks away, and there on this corner overlooking Los Angeles was this amazing four-story brick building, very fine building. I just completed my work in preservation, historic preservation. I knew this was a good hotel, but it was really down at the heels. It was missing the main feature, the tower, and it was on a plaza. I couldn't even tell that it was a plaza. But I looked, and then when the door opened up, somebody walked in, and I chased after this fellow up the stairs. I looked around, and I was surrounded by these men whom I realized were mariachis. And I came back downstairs, and I saw the sign on the plaza was Mariachi Plaza de Los Angeles. And there were over 100 mariachis living in this old hotel that my family, my great-grandparents had built. But it was, so I checked around and I found out that it was for sale. And I learned that there was a metro station that was being built and that there was a lot of interest from developers in knocking this building down. And I just couldn't believe it, that I finally see this place, and it's this wonderful, fine, as it turned out, architect-designed building, and it was going to be probably demolished. So that was, I don't think anybody at that point really realized that it was a historic hotel, a historic building. So when I finally figured out there was no way to buy it, I thought, well, let's at least document it. And that's when Miguel Gander got called into the picture.
And you have taken these incredible black and white photographs that are a major part of this book, very much focused on the mariachi musicians themselves.
Yeah, I mean, when I first went to L.A. on the first trip, we sort of knew that something dramatic was going to happen, whether the building was going to be torn down or it was going to be changed and gentrified because of Hope Memorial Hospital up on the hill. So we just started to photograph it, and I kept thinking I'd find somebody in L.A. doing that work. And we couldn't. We talked to people at UCLA. We talked to people in other places, and it just was important because there was Mexico, a cultural niche in Los Angeles that was, on the verge of disappearing. And, how do you have a mariachi plaza without mariachi? So I felt this real need, and over a period of years, I made a number of trips with Catherine, and she and I started documenting, interviewing, talking to people, learning more about the hotel, and it was just an amazing community. It was a living slice of Mexico in Los Angeles.
Were the mariachis living there Mexican immigrants?
For the most part, yeah. I mean, that's You know, for me, it was a group of artists. It was really, truly an artist community, and that's what was so exciting. These were people here who were not making a lot of money, who were struggling to really just make their art, to please other aspects of the community by making music, and that's what was so exciting. You know, I never asked people, you know, I said, you know, I speak Spanish enough that we can really communicate, but the legal issue or the status of who they are is not important. It's more, what's much more important is who they are as artists and musicians and people who really care about bringing music to the community.
I think it's so important to talk about the fact that this hotel did get saved, and it got historic, what's it called, historic preservation status?
Yes, well, actually, I worked on the local register, the Los Angeles, it became a Los Angeles City Monument, in which would slow down any plans for demolition.
Right.
And that led to me going into doing a lot of research, which comes out in the book. But actually, since the book has been published, since we wrote the book, it has now been added to the National Register of Historic Places in 2013.
And I think what's one of the things that's so interesting about that is that the way that that organizing happened and that the way the community came together around it, a lot of that had to do with the photography, because once these people were being photographed and relationships were established, then a trust was established. And it's kind of like, to me, this book is at least in part a document of what art can do to bring people together.
Well, yeah, you're giving me and the photographs more credit than they probably deserve. But we did become involved with the Los Angeles Community Corporation, which is the group that eventually saved the building and turned it into low-income housing. We did a fundraiser with them, and it was, I mean, one of the most exciting things in my life was seeing my photographs of the plaza being projected on the side of the L.A. Cathedral, big white monolith Richard Meyer building, and their fundraising and size of billboards. The community was there, too. You know, it was great.
I just wanted to say something a little bit, well, probably maybe a lot more about the East L.A. Community Corporation, which is known as ELAC. They're a group of primarily women from the community who very well educated, who came together to create this nonprofit in 1995. It's a they do a lot. Most of their work is with low income housing, providing loans to people, but this is unusual for them to actually buy a building such as this. They bought it from the heart because they grew up in the neighborhood. And as Evangeline Ordaz Molina says in her beautiful introduction, nobody should have bought this place. It was a wreck.
Right. It wasn't what you would call a prudent investment.
No.
It was an emotional investment.
It was an emotional investment, exactly. But they cared. They really cared. And they, when everybody expected developers, we didn't know who was going to be buying the building, they slipped in the night and bought it out from under all of these other, developers. And I think for a few million dollars, never realizing how much it was going to cost to make this place livable.
And now, people were living in it, but it was really derelict.
It was derelict. There would be one room, I don't know how large, a small room, two guys would be living in the room, they'd have a little hot plate. There was one bathroom for the whole hallway. And this is how hotels were back in the 1800s. You know, this was a nice middle-class hotel, but
it hadn't been renovated since 18.
No, the inside had not been touched. And so they basically, this is the miracle, and I don't know if I should give this away now, but they managed in about 5 years to raise $24 million.
Amazing.
To bring it up to standard. And of course, in L.A., you've got earthquake problems, too. But they did it historically correct, and that that was a big leap, and I think that's where I might have been of some help to encourage him along those lines. But I give East LA Community Corporation credit, because I don't think anyone else would have bought the hotel, put in that much effort, worked with the community, worked with the mariachis to see what they wanted, and done it in a historically correct fashion. And
they still live there.
And they're not as many. They're not as many, because, and I think hopefully there will be in time, because we'll go into that later, because they were just the way things worked out. But it's changed the whole, we've seen it change, Miguel and I have seen it change the whole community. I mean, not only the hotel, but it has had an impact.
Now, what is the New Mexico connection? Because there's a kind of East LA UNM connection here.
Well, this is Enrique. I'll take a stab at that one. The railroad here changed our lives in New Mexico, of course, and a lot of New Mexicans, as soon as that link was available, you're curious to take it to the end of the line, and Union Station is not far away from this place, and so there was actually a barrio of a lot of New Mexican people living in L.A. A lot of them lived around where Dodger Stadium is today, and so it's a space that's familiar to us. And part of the problem in California was that, I don't know, I attribute it to the star syndrome, I call it, where our colleagues at UCLA and Chicano Studies, the people that we contacted, that were contacted to maybe help out with this project, they just weren't interested. It's kind of like they were interested in the big name mariachis like Los Camperos and well-established groups, but they were much less interested about the immigrant mariachi trying to look his or her best, standing on the street corner waiting for a gig. And I don't know. Miguel and I and Kathy waited until the California folks had first shot. We're willing to grant them that, because we feel the same here. You know, they come out here and they try to start doing stuff on New Mexico, and we go, wait a minute. It's not that you're territorial. It's just that you try to recognize, well, who's got the knowledge here? Who are the people on the ground? And then we came to find out that we were the people on the ground, and this turned into a New Mexico / East LA project. And there are a lot of old buildings in the old plaza area of Los Angeles, those old brick buildings. Most of them fell down in the series of earthquakes that happened. There's a cultural center right on the plaza, right where Olvera Street goes down, that was saved. But really, it took extraordinary efforts to preserve these buildings. And Hotel Mariachi, the Cummings Hotel, was, I don't think it would have withstood another earthquake. I mean, it was really on the brink of just falling apart, and they did put a steel reinforced concrete skeleton about 4 or 5 inches wide that's just holding that place up. It's an amazing bunch of architectural preservation that's going on, but this is of course about much more than bricks and mortar. There are a lot of bricks and mortar. There's a lot of bricks and mortar in LA, but the extraordinary thing about this area is what UNESCO calls the intangible cultural heritage. And worldwide, cultural traditions are in danger because of getting displaced for various reasons from wherever they happen to reside. I mean, it could be a building, a public space connected to it. There's a big plaza in the first one of these projects was actually in Marrakesh in Morocco. And the Jemaa el Fna Plaza is just a big piece of dirt and inside the old Medina. And there was a French company that was going to turn it into a bus station or something. And people went, no, this is the place where everything it means to be Moroccan, it's a very diverse society there, but everything was enacted in that space. And so UNESCO helped rescue that space, and it was documented by teams of Moroccans and Spanish people who were historically connected with it and loved it. And so we went through a similar process, not with UNESCO, But those arguments for intangible heritage are very compelling, and people listen up when you bring up that aspect of things. And people began to understand that this is more than a hotel and a little plaza that can just be fixed up and gentrified or commercialized some way. That there's a cultural heritage that's happening here. The Mariachi Plaza de Los Angeles, as it's called, is one of the spaces, one of those liminal spaces, one of those important spaces where mariachi culture, as we know it today, partly evolved there. That's a place where women first began to sing the mariachi.
Tell us about the statue of Lucha Reyes.
Yeah, there's she came to, she was a movie star. Lucha Reyes was a movie star. Her movie character was called La Borrachita.
And the drunken lady.
The little drunkard. And, of course, it eventually caught up with her. And, you know, she did, that was her demise. But she sang, she was a mariachi singer. And she put on virtually, it's almost like cross-dressing. The clothes are very masculine. The gestures are very masculine. It's a very interesting kind of almost transgender kind of performance when women take up that voice, and you never know if they're going to change all the adjectives in the song that are feminine, if they'll masculinize them because a woman is singing. It's the ambiguity of it is really delicious, and people have loved women mariachi singers ever since, and she was one of the first. And so you step onto this plaza, and there she is. And Miguel has a great picture in the book of a young woman mariachi walking by the statue, and that's in a nutshell the heritage.
We're talking about the book Hotel Mariachi: Urban Space and Cultural Heritage in Los Angeles. What are the lives of mariachis, and particularly the ones who are photographed in this book and described in this book, what are their lives like? How did they get work? What do they do, if anything, besides playing music?
Most of them are just mariachis, I mean, are the ones we talk to. I mean, that's their job. If you have a business card, you're a mariachi group. They just call their friends. You cell phone, you know who plays what instruments, and you get a gig, and you call what you need. There's kind of a musical canon in mariachi, so they all know the same songs. They pretty much dress in the typical charro outfits in black. And therefore, you know, you can be a company. We were there, Catherine and I, for Cinco de Mayo one year. And I literally hundreds of mariachis got work that day, and we found like six or seven who didn't because they ran out of trumpets. You know, because you would be calling a friend, and this friend would be working, and there were like four or five people on Cinco de Mayo just standing around because they couldn't find any trumpets. But the plaza is actually a place where people come, and you contract the mariachis right there, and you say how many you can pay, how many you're going to, you know, work with. The other thing that they're doing around the hotel is they're also unionizing. They're trying to establish set amounts of money that the mariachis make. I mean, they're all itinerant artists. But, you know, there's a printer there who prints business cards primarily for mariachis. There's a mariachi clothing store there where they will custom make mariachi suits. There's a whole industry. It's like being in Mexico. There's merchants on the street selling the silver that goes on the pants and little saints and special shoes that they wear that make the appropriate for their costumes. It's its own little world,
yeah.
That's focused on mariachi. I mean, that's the beauty of it.
One of the things about mariachis in L.A., besides women getting to sing mariachi or women stepping up and singing it there because they wouldn't have been able to in Mexico, the other thing that happened in L.A., a lot of musicologists attribute to Nati Cano and his group Los Camperos, who played in a restaurant for many years, and many of those guys had their start on that plaza. They'd come in as immigrants and try and get it together as best they could in terms of immigration, and they would stay and prosper musically and personally in the California setting. But what happened is really extraordinary. Mariachis in Mexico are not well respected, traditionally speaking. You could actually find signs that said no dogs or mariachis allowed.
Yeah.
And they're, because it's a disguise. It's a peasant who wore white pajamas back home could put on this suit. And the suit is has a very complex history, but it kind of denotes higher social class. There was a police force in Mexico. The rural police used to dress in uniforms like that. Rich landowners dressed in uniforms like that. And so the uniform itself commands respect, but yet the person wearing it might be from a very humble background. And so these musicians are not well respected in a lot of areas. And L.A. is really the first place to start respecting them, because as professional artists, they became so good. Los Camperos are the famous group there that Smithsonian has recorded and whatnot. And the musicianship is so extraordinary that they earned respect for the music as played by the musicians, not just who the singing star happens to be. And so that's a California thing too. And so a lot of what mariachi is and what it means kind of comes out of this area. And you got to sleep at night. So where do you sleep in Kathy's hotel? Right?
I just want to go back to just a point that Enrique made about intangible culture. Since this book was published, or actually since we wrote it, I don't know if you're aware of it, but if Enrique and Miguel are aware, but mariachi music has now been added by UNESCO to the list of world of endangered intangible cultures.
Really?
Mariachi, yes, it's on the list of World Heritage list now.
That's something that I wanted to ask you about, because I mean, when a musical form kind of migrates with people from one country to another, how does it affect the evolution of that? Because music is always evolving. It never stands still. And when it does, it can kind of stagnate or become a kind of archaeological relic.
The basic trope of mariachi music is the story is people coming to town. People living in the urban area who remember their rural roots or something. It's like country music in the States. The basic canción, the basic song, is kind of all about coming to town. In Michoacán, which is one of the two states that's really where mariachi music was born, people think Jalisco, but it's also Michoacán. In Michoacán, there's most of the people live up in the Misty Mountains, and it's high up, and it's a little cold, and people are kind of sad, as the stereotype goes. And all of the mule trains go down to the port cities, and they're bringing up all of the stuff from Acapulco, all of these trade items, and they're also bringing music. And so the son abajeño in its very terminology is the son, the kind of mariachi piece coming from the lowlands, coming up from the coast, where, as the stereotype goes, people are happy, it's all warm, and you don't have to worry about much. And so it's just getting a little piece of that coastal culture. And so the music is about migration, either within the country of Mexico. It's a lot of the themes of the modern day songs are about migration to migration north. And the great thing is that it's vulnerable, because it is an intangible cultural heritage. But it has a lot of practitioners. So there's high school mariachi programs all over the country, and one is coming to play for us on Sunday. We made sure to invite a high school mariachi, and is it from Santa Fe High School? Where is it, Kathy?
Yes. Santa Fe High School.
Yes, mm-hmm. And so it's really, really 16. Important.
16.
That's 16.
16 players?
Yes.
High school players will be with us, and so this is happening all over the Southwest, all over the U.S. There's a huge movement of that comes out of high school music program. It's kind of a cultural pride thing. In New Mexico, we love mariachi, even though it's really exotic to this place. I mean, it kind of came in, and the music is about arriving. And boy, if the teachers in the high school knew about some of these lyrics, the lyrics of the mariachi song are some of the most flirtatious you will ever see. And they're loaded with a very fine and artistic erotic sensibility. And sometimes you'll hear in a chorus of a song, you know, and everybody will be laughing and they'll go, que si, que si, que no, que no, que si, que no, que no. And of course, it's the on again, off again relationship, erotically charged relationship between human beings. That's part of our very essence as human beings. And so we're going to hear, for sure, we'll hear La Negra. La Negra is the signature mariachi son. What is a son? It's a song, but it's more than a song. It's a very American kind of genre that if you can tap your foot in threes and then turn around and tap the other foot in twos, that's the rhythm of the song. It's very compelling.
American in the sense of all of the Americas.
All of the Americas have some version of the song. In Chile, it's called the cueca, you know, and in Mexico, it has different names. The son mariachi from Jalisco, a lot of places use the son as a name. The son cubano is the son as it exists in Cuba. So you go to the set, you're at the fiestas, and they're playing La Negra, the most famous one, and you get that si, que si, que no thing. And if the principal only knew, who knows what they would do. So the lyrics go, he's talking to a woman, to this very flirtatious woman, and he's saying, a todos diles que sí, pero no les digas cuándo. So you're telling everybody yes, but you're not telling them when it's going to happen.
I think a lot of us know that personally from experience.
Así me dijiste a mí. That's how you told it to me. And that's why I live my life in suffering. You told me yes, but we'll see about the when. And it's hilarious. It's supercharged.
The book is called Hotel Mariachi, Urban Space and Cultural Heritage in Los Angeles, with an essay by Enrique Madrid, one by Catherine Lopez-Kurland, and fabulous black and white photographs by Miguel Gandert. And once again, there is a book signing and musical performance by mariachis this Sunday, the 16th of February at 2 o'clock at the Palace of the Governors right here in Santa Fe. I want to thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Marcella.
And we're going to go out with a recording of this very same mariachi, La Negra. And this was recorded live in Mariachi Plaza in Los Angeles.